with Truth News Radio on the 2nd of October 2015. My name is Hereward Fenton. Welcome to another show. I've got a few topics lined up for you today which are quite deep and quite difficult to grapple with. But before I get into the main meat of the show today, I just want to reflect on the big story of the last couple of days, which is really a world-changing kind of scenario where we see the Russian military engagement in Syria. And, you know, normally I don't advocate, I don't approve of any kind of military actions at all. I'm certainly against war, and I abhor the use of violence. However, there are times when the situations between of the conflicts between nations and the hegemony that is exhibited by certain global powers becomes so blatant and so wicked that it is actually necessary to counterbalance that. And I have to say, I really do welcome, and I feel a sense of relief that Russia has sent its fighter planes into Syria, and we've also got news that Iran is sending ground troops into Syria, and that the whole power structure there in that part of the world is now changing. And the American Empire, which is really the entire West, is now on the back foot. And the main point I want to make about all of that, right, is that the Russian leader Vladimir Putin has stepped up and shown the world that he is a true statesman, that he is a great leader by comparison to the United States, and by comparison to any leaders that the United States have had for many years. And the main reason why Russia stands out and why Putin stands out is not the military force. I mean, this is something that is now the last resort, that it had to happen because of the unspeakable monstrosity of the CIA-funded extremists in Syria that were put there specifically for the purpose of overthrowing a government that the West did not like for a bunch of strategic reasons and reasons connected to the State of Israel and possibly a gas pipeline. They simply wanted Assad gone, and they thought they could get rid of Assad the way they've got rid of other puppets that they controlled or leaders that they undermined, such as Muammar Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. And they believed they would do the same with Assad. I felt from the beginning that it wasn't going to happen, because Assad was a very different kettle of fish from those other leaders. Assad, very highly educated, married to a British educated doctor, and very popular at home, and of course a secular nationalist who was the antithesis of ISIS. The antithesis of these murdering, crucifying psychopaths who are now running rampant over that country. But the main point of it, of course, is that all that happened simply because the powers that be wanted Assad out. And they used their cheap, dirty, filthy tactics that they've used decade after decade in country after country that normally work. But they didn't work this time. Now, a lot of people are concerned that this is going to escalate into World War III. Well, I think that it is a type of World War III, but I think World War III is not going to be the Hollywood version of World War III. It's not going to be the apocalypse. It's going to be the scenario where the American Empire collapses. And it will happen possibly without a shot being fired. I'm not ruling out the possibility of something terrible happening as well. It's possible. But even then, I suspect that it would be limited. Because I think what's really going to happen now is that because Vladimir Putin has stepped up and shown that he is the greatest leader, the greatest world leader on the planet at this time, and he's done so by bringing people together, but by building unity, right? He makes the Americans look weak. And this is the beauty of it, is that it doesn't have to involve missiles. It doesn't involve massive bloodshed. It is done by diplomacy. The war is won by diplomacy. And I think World War III may well be the war that is won by diplomacy alone. Of course, there's real bombs. There's people being killed. There were horrendous crimes being committed in Syria, and that had to stop. And now the world will see very clearly who was responsible for all of that. The world will understand, and it will be impossible to escape from this. It'll be impossible to reverse from this, that America, the West, the CIA will be understood to have been the architects of the extremist monstrosity that is ISIS. And of course, that interconnects back to the whole history of their support for fundamentalist extremist jihadi sects in Islam as part of a great game strategy, as part of a strategy of control by division. And that is the opposite of what Vladimir Putin is doing. Vladimir Putin is building consensus, building unity, bringing people together. And his approach will win. Now, I'm not 100% convinced of the pure intentions of Vladimir Putin. I don't think we should just sit back and say, hey, he's a great guy, just whatever he does is fine. Not at all. I don't necessarily trust him, but he's a great leader. He's a great leader in the sense that Kennedy was a great leader. And America hasn't had a leader since Kennedy, anywhere near what Vladimir Putin is doing for Russia, for the world, right now. So that's my take on it. I mean, it's obviously a big story. I don't think I can really add much more to it than that. But over the next few short months, we're going to learn a lot. And I think this is a pivotal point in history. I think a lot of things are going to change from here on in. And I think they're going to change for the better. I believe that there is going to be a general improvement in the outlook for the world as a result of these momentous events that are taking place in Syria right now. But now on to today's main topics, because I want to talk about begin with some news relevant to Australia. And it's about the expulsion of the anti-abortionist Troy Newman. And this story brings together a lot of issues which are very, very important for freedom of speech and, of course, aren't being given any kind of proper coverage in any form of news in Australia. You know, you could look at the mainstream, you look at the alternative left sites, which are, you know, the only ones that are reasonably large. There's nothing. You know, they don't care, and they're actually quite happy to see somebody denied a visa for this country, denied the basic right to speak, despite having been invited here, despite having an audience and having many people in the country who want to hear what he has to say, they don't mind at all the complete suppression of freedom and rights of this individual because it suits their agenda. And that again, is sort of typical of this failed. And, you know, I hate to generalize and I hate to resort to stereotypes, but it is the failed left-wing agenda, which, you know, perhaps 30, 40 years ago was really tied to some very important progressive elements in our society, but has now simply become a vehicle for statism, for a bullying kind of attitude that denies people's rights, that denies people's uniqueness. But there's more, because in the case of the abortion debate, what we've of course seen is that with the recent exposés of the Center for Medical Ethics in the United States, with the exposés on Planned Parenthood and the trade in body parts of aborted fetuses, what we've seen is a whole other side to this, a whole other angle to it that many people were probably not aware of. I certainly wasn't aware of. That there is actually a profit motive, that there is actually money being made, and we don't really know how much because it's not fully disclosed, all the aspects to that. But there is an industry, just put it that way, there is an industry surrounding the use of these discarded human beings that is a very big one. And you know, of course you have to expect that in a world where we have such a massive medical research industries and so much going on, that there would be great interest to have access to these types of materials for the purposes of research, which are always connected to patents, which are always connected to massively profitable enterprises. So it's a no-brainer that having hundreds of thousands of aborted fetal body parts available for purchase, it is going to be an important sort of resource for by the biomedical industry and medical research generally. And there's just a basic conflict of interest right there that I think hasn't been fully engaged with. And I'm going to continue right into that when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And just continuing there where we left off, talking about the expulsion, the deportation of Troy Newman, anti-abortion activist and the leader of a group called Operation Rescue based in the United States. Now, some background on it. This all sort of came to a head when Labor MP Terry Butler wrote a letter to the Minister of Immigration to basically ask him, that's Minister Peter Dutton, to deny a visa to Troy Newman, And I'll just read to you from the letter here. Dear Minister, I refer to a report published by Mr. Bernard Keane that anti-choice extremist Troy Newman will tour Australia next month, holding a series of public events to campaign against Australian women's reproductive rights and proposed laws to create a buffer zone around medical clinics. Mr. Newman is the co-author of Their Blood Cries Out, which argues that medical professionals participating in terminations should be executed. And a quote here from the book, which, by the way, is out of print. In addition to our personal guilt in abortion, the United States government has abrogated its responsibility to properly deal with the blood guilty. This responsibility rightly involves executing convicted murderers, including abortionists, for their crimes in order to expunge blood guilt from the land and people. Instead, the act of abortion has been elevated to a God-given right and the abortionists canonized as saints. Consequently, the entire nation has the blood-red stain of the lives of the innocent upon its head. And another quote here that she used. Why then do we consider any differently the women who seek to hire killers to murder their preborn children? Why the hesitancy to say that not only the mothers, but also the fathers who willfully abort their babies are guilty of murder? Now, I'll just read a little more from the letter. I'm concerned that Mr. Newman's presence in Australia will cause significant harm to our community. In a media release published today, his hosts, Right to Life Australia, promised that Mr. Newman will stir up debate throughout the country. There is a risk that this will involve the harassment and intimidation of women accessing reproductive services and professionals offering those services at medical clinics and result in their vilification within the community, especially vulnerable women. Mr. Newman's conduct may incite discord within the community and disrupt the ability of women to access lawful reproductive medicine. So that's the essence of the letter. Now, the letter had an effect. The visa was cancelled, but Troy Newman managed to actually get a flight to Australia even without a valid visa, but he was denied entry upon arrival and has now been deported. But there is a high court challenge, and I actually have an article here from his own group, Operation Rescue. Okay, from operationrescue.org, and this is an article published just today, the 2nd of October, 2015. Australian High Court ignores facts, orders Newman deported. So the High Court has already made its decision upon this. Melbourne, Australia. The Australian High Court has ruled that the Ministry of Immigration was justified in withdrawing Troy Newman's visa and has ordered him deported. Newman will also have to pay court costs. Newman had appealed the decision to cancel his visa, which was down while he was en route, and without proper notification, sought to enjoin the government from deporting him. Mary Collier of Australia Right to Life, which had invited Newman to Australia for a speaking tour, read the following statement at a press conference after the hearing. The judge accepted that there was a serious question to be tried about whether the decision to cancel Troy's visa was valid, having regard for the implied freedom of political communication. However, the judge found that the balance of convenience did not favour the grant of interlocutory injunction to prevent his removal from Australia. While that serious question is tried. On this basis, the application for an interlocutory injunction was refused. Any final determination of the matter will occur at some later date. In order to reach this decision, the court there's a few spelling errors in this article. In order to reach this decision, the court had to look at Troy's 25-year record of peaceful law-abiding advocacy on behalf of the most vulnerable call of human beings, the pre-born. It is a sad day when downright lies and twisted words triumph over truth. But that is exactly what happened today, said Cheryl Sullinger, Senior Policy Advisor for Operation Rescue. Okay. And they have lodged a formal complaint with Minister Peter Dutton, objecting to the poor treatment given Newman. Now, there's a few things to say about this. It's part of a trend that we're seeing in Australia where people who are politically incorrect are denied a voice, especially if they come from overseas. We saw what happened to Cherie Tenpenny, although her visa wasn't cancelled. Many of the extremist vaccine lobby wanted Cherie Tenpenny's visa to be cancelled, but they didn't get their way. However, they did manage to terrorise the owners of the venues where she was intending to speak into cancelling her speaking venues. And this was for a completely separate topic, but again, it's one which is politically incorrect. It's one which the powers that be, especially the commercial corporate interests, which of course really determine public opinion in our country, it is those commercial corporate interests which are threatened by both people like Troy Newman and Cherie Tenpenny. Because as we know, and as has been revealed, there is a massive industry in the trade in fetal body parts. Regardless of how that is covered up, regardless of how the charities say that there is only a minimal fee and a transfer fee and a courier fee and these things, there is a massive amount of money to be made in these body parts. It's a gold mine that they don't want to give up. And that leads me to the most important aspect of this, which is late-term abortions, which is what the vast majority of the trade in fetal body parts is all about. It's about late-term abortions. And I've got some stunning information to share with you about the laws in Australia in regard to late-term abortions. I did some research on this, so just to follow up, I looked at this before, but I discovered that in the ACT that there is no limit on when you can abort the baby. We'll be right back to tell you more about this. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And just talking about abortion, talking about this shocking attack on free speech by the minister who denied the visa for Troy Newman, on the basis of that quote there that I read to you from the book. Now, of course, Troy Newman is a Christian. In the United States, they have the death penalty, and he believes that abortion is murder. Therefore, his calling for the death penalty is simply an extension of his beliefs that are pretty much mainstream conservative beliefs of millions of people in the United States. So by branding him as an extremist, they're basically saying half of the United States of America are extremists. And a large number of people in Australia too, because a lot of people think that we need to really revisit this whole question of where we draw the line between what is abortion and what should be actually called murder or manslaughter or, you know, certainly homicide. And if you look at the actual the laws, it varies state by state, and it's quite extreme in terms of the variation. And a lot of this stuff has changed only quite recently. For example, in Victoria, they only decriminalised abortion in 2008. And it was a big event, and there was a huge amount of attention on it. There were a lot of people on both sides, the Right to Life and the pro-choice, and you know, it went right to the wire, and then guess what? You know, they decriminalised it. And they brought in Victoria very lenient new laws on abortion, which allows abortion up to 24 weeks with no interference. You can in Victoria you can go up to 24 weeks. You can have an abortion at 23 weeks and 6 days, and there is no problem at all. You know, there's no you won't be questioned about it. It's just like up to you. You want to get rid of it? It's up to you, right? And of course, you know, 24 weeks. It's a highly evolved fetus at that point. It's a person. It's a little person in there, right? There's no doubt about it. But it gets worse, folks. And I only discovered this today, that in the ACT, there is actually no criminal statute whatsoever against abortion. This is from Wikipedia, an article entitled Abortion in Australia. In the Australian Capital Territory, reference to an abortion as a criminal offence was repealed by the Crimes Abolition of Offence of Abortion Act 2002. Before then, abortion law was for many years governed by case law. Section 9 of the Human Rights Act 2004 confirms that preborn human life does not enjoy the right to life. Does not enjoy the right to life. Full-term abortions on demand are legal in the ACT, as there are no gestational limits. You can go up to 9 months. Now, Australian Capital Territory, for those listening overseas, that is, of course, where our government resides. It is the federal capital, equivalent to Washington, D.C. And it is its own distinct state, very small in area, but it has a very distinctive set of laws, as you can see. But it varies. It varies. The laws vary from state to state. In New South Wales, abortions are still unlawful. However, through case law, which is quite extensive, it is technically legal. And there is certainly no problem about doing it. However, the limits on gestation, although they're not actually explicitly defined here, they're certainly not as lenient as they are in Victoria, and certainly not as lenient as they are in the ACT. Other states have specific cut-off points after which abortion becomes not exactly illegal, but subject to more tighter scrutiny. In the Northern Territory, it's 14 weeks. In Queensland, it's 22 weeks. And in South Australia, it is 22 weeks. Now, there's a few issues here to look at. I mean, the most important one, the most painful one to face, is that in allowing, in basically turning a blind eye, in saying that this person that is being carried inside a woman is not actually a person, it sets the stage for a future, and I'm not just making this up, because bioethicists have raised this as a possibility, that children could be terminated after birth as well. There's been research on this, there's been articles, there's been academics come forward. And I've discussed this theme on the show a number of times. It is quite conceivable that at a point in the future, the termination or the abortion of post-birth children could be allowed. And, you know, the argument is that, well, it's actually not that much different, you know, whether the baby's inside the womb or outside the womb. And this is what some academics from, I believe it was La Trobe University in Victoria, put forward as the argument. They said, well, you know, we've decided that late-term abortions are okay, so therefore why should we arbitrarily draw the line there? Why not legalize killing of babies? It's evil. It is. It really sends chills up my spine, actually. I don't know what more to say about it. I mean, and speaking out about this is politically incorrect, and if you speak out about it, you're an extremist. And recently, laws have been put forward in the Parliament in Victoria to create abortion clinic buffer zones. And this is to go into law in Victoria soon, this year. Buffer zones, which will prevent protesters from, I think it's a 150-metre radius around an abortion clinic. So they're not even going to allow citizens to protest anywhere near where this baby killing is going on. Now, this, of course, is turned into a polarized story in the media. You're going to always, when you read about it, it's going to be like the extreme fundamentalist Christian right to life versus the progressive feminist pro-choice left-wing people. And the truth is, you know, most people are in between those extremes. But most people are not comfortable. Most people aren't even aware that, for example, in the ACT, that you can have an abortion up to 9 months. And I think most people are horrified by it. This is actually a very much a mainstream, middle-of-the-road kind of, you know, position to have, to be pretty horrified by the trivial way in which human life can be extinguished. You know, you go to prison for drink driving. You go to prison for a lot of things that don't involve killing a human being. But in Victoria and in the ACT, there's no legal penalty at all. It's just like, you know, it's just something there. It's in your womb. You can just do whatever you want with it. But that attitude will lead to the idea that you could do the same thing to babies. And then, you know, it just moves up from there. It just goes up from there to a point where you have a totalitarian society like they've had in Cambodia and other countries, where people can just be eliminated because they're not convenient, because the state doesn't want them, because the state considers them to be a burden and unnecessary. Exactly the same things have happened in entire countries with adult populations. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point,
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I do have one more important topic to raise with you today. I wanted to spend a bit more time on it, but I got a little bit caught up there in my rant in the previous section. This is actually a very important issue, and I may just have to continue this again next week. Let me just preface this by saying that in the debate on vaccines, I pride myself on being different to a lot of the commentators who are out there who take a very, very fixed position on it, a very hard-line position, and therefore tend to constantly focus on only one sort of PR angle and sometimes don't really do justice to the full amount of information that is out there. I'm not in that category. I'm very keen on finding out the truth, and I'm willing to look at information that's pro-vaccine as well as information that's against vaccines, and I think that's very useful and very helpful. And there's a new study that's come out just this week, and it is a study of rhesus macaque monkeys. And I'll just get that up for you right now. It is a study that is actually a little more intensive than some of the previous studies that involves looking at rhesus macaque monkeys and giving them a variety of different vaccine regimens. And they claim that there was no evidence of either brain abnormalities or behavioral abnormalities akin to autism spectrum disorder. And the total study included about, I think, 73 monkeys who were given either the thimerosal-containing vaccines or the MMR vaccines or the standard vaccine schedule. There were three different groups. And then there was another control group of about 16 monkeys who were simply given saline injections. And what they found is that that there was no significant difference between those two groups. And I'll put the PDF of the actual study up on the website. It's a little bit too technical to actually try and go through it on the show. But the basic import of this is that is that it looks like, in this group of monkeys, the vaccines didn't cause any notable effects. Now, this is interesting because there was another study conducted several years ago, and I'll just get that one up. And this is actually from 2010. And some of the aspects of this study are very similar, although it was a smaller group of monkeys. But the title of this study is Influence of Pediatric Vaccines on Amygdala Growth and Opioid Ligand Binding in Rhesus Macaque Infants. And this study examined amygdala growth in rhesus macaque infants receiving the complete U.S. childhood vaccine schedule. And it says here, vaccine-exposed and saline-injected control infants underwent MRI and PET imaging at approximately 4 and 6 months of age, representing two specific time frames within the vaccination schedule. A volumetric analysis showed that exposed animals did not undergo the maturational changes over time in amygdala volume that was observed in unexposed animals. These results suggest that maturational changes in amygdala volume and the binding capacity in the amygdala was significantly altered in infant macaques receiving the vaccine schedule. Now, this earlier study did not include behavioral analysis. It was purely lab-based. Now, it's another interesting fact about these two studies is that one of the principal researchers was involved in both of these studies, Laura Hewitson. And what's curious about this is that Laura Hewitson's name came up a lot earlier with that earlier study because she herself has a child who suffers from autism, and she has actually petitioned the vaccine court in the US for compensation based on and she's a medical researcher, but she believes her child was injured by a vaccine. Now, these two studies basically contradict each other, or in one sense, you don't actually have to say they contradict each other. They don't support each other. The second study simply doesn't show the data that the first study showed. Now, of course, the pro-vaccine groups have leapt onto this later study and basically say it's game over. You know, this proves that there is no problem with vaccines. You know, look at it. We've studied the monkeys and there's nothing there. They very rarely mention this other study from a few years ago that indicated that there were problems. And, you know, I think it's fascinating. I think it's really, really interesting. And, you know, I'm not scientifically astute enough to be able to assess the merits of these two different studies. They were both studies conducted on macaque influence. They had a different methodology. They came up with different results. Now, what does that really mean? And I think I am qualified as a journalistic observer to comment on what we, the general public, might draw as inferences from two studies that have different results. Does it mean that the first study is completely cancelled out? No, of course not. It means that this study has brought some new information in. The other study still stands on its merits, and it was still a peer-reviewed study. Now, of course, if that other study was the only study that existed that showed that there was any connection between vaccines and autism, and there were like 1,000 other studies that showed that there was no problem, then you might say, well, it looks like, you know, all of these studies show everything's fine and just this one study here, well, maybe that was a rogue study. Of course, we know that Andrew Wakefield, of course, did a study, but they now describe his work as fraudulent when, in fact, none of the actual research data that Andrew Wakefield drew on was ever refuted. And yet he's widely cited in mainstream articles as being convicted of fraud. No, he wasn't convicted of fraud. He was convicted of unethical behaviour and a purported conflict of interest. But, of course, they all have conflict of interest. All studies of this type have a conflict of interest because there's always these commercial interests behind researching vaccines and how vaccines work, because vaccines make a lot of money. Now, curiously, with the first study that came out, it was criticised on the basis of conflict of interest because of Laura Hewitson's own child. But then this second study, which also has her name on it, isn't accused of having a conflict of interest simply because it didn't produce the result that would have supported one side of the argument. But the main point in all of this is that these studies are just providing information. Now, what studies exist? Well, if you go on the internet, you can find there are many, many studies that show connections between autism and vaccines. Or more generally, between autism and environmental factors of which vaccines may form a part. It is sometimes very difficult to study the specifics of vaccines in isolation because it's very hard to ever get a control group. But there have been a lot of studies of environmental toxins, such as thimerosal, such as ethylmercury, methylmercury, and there is a definite proof that these environmental toxins have an effect on brain growth, which is potentially connected to autism spectrum disorder. There are also studies which have shown that gastrointestinal disorders can definitely lead to autism spectrum disorder symptoms. And these gastrointestinal disorders have been connected with the specific active ingredients in vaccines such as MMR. There are a lot of studies, there's a lot of research going on in this area, and I've got a couple of articles which actually have a collection of links on this topic. One here, 22 medical studies that show vaccines cause autism. There has been a study that shows that the hepatitis B vaccine given to newborn baby boys could triple the risk of developing an autism spectrum disorder. We have run out of time. There's a whole bunch of them here. They're all properly peer-reviewed studies. So I think it's great that a study has come out that has shown that in this group of monkeys that there was not the development of ASD type symptoms. But that is not a reason then to say, well, we're just going to stop looking at this. And this is the way the horribly deceitful, evil people in the mainstream media now spin this. They say, oh, we shouldn't do any more studies. Don't fund any more studies because this one study, you know, didn't confirm the claims. You know, we're at the end of the hour. This is our show for the week. I will be back next week with Truth News Radio. Herriwood Fenton signing out. See you then.